ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 in Chicago with a large live studio audience. Alright, I turned the volume down as best as I could. Alright, that's to make up of the several weeks we did not have a live studio audience. And we have a super exciting podcast for you this week. The Spiritual Olympic Torch. First of all, I'd like to tell everyone about the very exciting Project 613 Summer Chill. Yes, our big event of the summer. You know, we're expecting just, you know, whatever, we'll chill out, you know, 40, 50 people. Then it went to 75 people. Now we're like 125 people at our summer event. So it should be amazing. If you do know young professionals would like to attend, we currently have a wait list. We're doing our best to make sure that everyone gets in off the wait list. We will see what happens. But it's a very exciting, very gratifying that not only our educational events, but our social events are really hitting the mark over here with Project 613. And now transitioning to the very exciting Olympic Games we have going on in Paris. All right, a couple of cute human interest stories over here. The bad sport Nurali Emomali. Check that out. From Tajikistan. We actually have a student from Tajikistan. Anyway, good old Nurali refused to shake hands with Israeli judo competitor Baruch Shmelov. Probably Russian Jew of some kind. Anyway, cracked myself up. Nurali shouted Allah Akbar and did not shake good old Baruch's hands. Anyway, Nurali ended up with a dislocated shoulder crying on the mat. And my, funny enough, my student who sends this to me, good old Amanda, she says, looks like homeboy will be crying from the river to the sea, which I thought was a great line. Anyway, human interest story over there with a little bit of divine retribution. Sorry, Nurali. Gotta shake hands, be a good boy. All right, and the other one is that a young Jewish woman, Jessie Fox, representing Australia, although she has French roots, I butchered both an Australian and French accent within the span of 7 seconds, which was impressive. Anyway, she won her second gold medal in kayaking. Mazel tov, Jessie, and way to represent the Jewish people. Okay, so let's get to the roots of the Olympic Games and the Olympic torch. Okay, so fun facts about the Olympics. Now, we Jews, we don't just do anything for no reason. We Jews, we're a little bit of sticklers for things. We actually like knowing what we're doing. We don't just sort of, you know, go with the flow for no reason. We want to know, why are we doing things? So let's take a quick peek at the origins of the Olympics and of this Olympic torch. All right, here we go. So the Olympics started many hundred years BCE, 700 BCE, 800 BCE, 600 BCE, in Greece, in Olympia, in Greece, and it started as a religious pagan celebration to Zeus, okay? And games were a part of this celebration, sacrifices to Zeus, the god, some say that Zeus himself founded the Olympic Games when he defeated his father, Cronos. So much for Kibbutz Avim, honoring your father there. I'm not sure exactly how that went down, but clearly Zeus was not fulfilling the mitzvah, the commandment to honor your parents. So it was very much a pagan ritual. We're going to come back to that. It's going to be a very important part of the idea of the Olympics. Okay, it originally was mainly running competitions. Okay, interesting. And then sports developed later, but mainly it was running competitions. All right. The third interesting fun fact is that, yes, clothes were not worn in the Olympics. In fact, yes, the sports were done And they were, in fact, they were naked. Now, there are two origins of this minhag. Sorry, that means custom in Hebrew. Of this custom. One was good old Orsippus of Megara. Of course, good old Orsippus. Anyway, he had a loincloth. This was in 720 BCE, according to the article that I read. He had a loincloth that fell. And I guess it became so popular that other athletes decided to adopt it. Okay, that's one origin story. The other one was that the Spartans introduced it in the 8th century BCE, to spite the Persians who thought it was uncouth to be naked. Well, the Persians seem to be having the right idea. Certainly the Jews also think it is uncouth to be naked in public. But nevertheless, it quickly became the norm of Greek sports and of Greek culture, showing power, dominance, and the almost worship of the human body. If you look at Greek art, it's all the busts of the torso of a male, and with my muscular physique, with a very powerful physique. Okay, now. I saw what we call a machlokas, a disagreement. Fun fact number four about the Olympics. If war was stopped, okay, or not during the times of the Olympics. Okay, I saw one article that said that, in fact, all war stopped. And this is the root of this idea of the Olympic spirit of peace. The other article said that it's absolutely nonsense. The Greeks and their warring states and their enemies did not stop fighting, but they would allow safe passage to get to the festivals that were held 4 years, sometimes 2 years, depending on which of the Olympics there were. There were different versions of it in different places. Okay, and the fifth fun fact about the Olympics, which you may or may not know, which is still very true today, is that the athletes who were the victors became heroes and celebrities. And in fact, they would come back to their hometown to a great victory parade. Does that sound familiar? And they would even have statues made of them. Hall of Fame, anyone? Okay, so these are clearly deep human needs to idolize the hero and the victor, because clearly it's touching on some deep human need. If it's to this day, you go to any of the halls of fames and they reveal their bust, right, which is a mini statue of their face and their shoulders. Okay, so those are some fascinating roots of the Olympics. And now I obviously want to contrast this with the Jewish approach, but we are going to move on to the Olympic torch. Okay, we'll do all the Greek stuff and then we'll do the Jewish stuff. Is that a deal? Okay. So here we go. Where did the torch emanate? Okay, if you're in your car, if you're doing Pilates, if you're on the, I don't know, you're swimming with your waterproof iPods, AirPods, whatever they're called. Okay, we had iPods once upon a time. You can answer the question yourself. When did the Olympic torch ritual begin? Drum roll, please. It was not in ancient Greece. In fact, the torch ceremony, that we would light a torch at Olympia and then bring it to wherever the Olympic Games were being held, was established in 1936 by the Nazis in the 1936 Olympic Games of Berlin. You heard me right. In fact, it was started by a German named Karl Diem, and he was the one who conceived this concept of the Olympic torch relay. Now, if you actually think that perhaps this was just sort of an accident, it's absolutely not. In fact, Adolf Hitler initially did not like the idea of the Olympics, but then when he, because he thought it was a Jewish invention, of course. However, Joseph Goebbels, who was the propaganda minister of infamy of Nazi Germany and was probably the main one who defiled and vilified the Jewish people and made them into the image of being pariahs and controlling the world and parasites that needed to be destroyed. Okay, he very much got on board with this and saw this as a vehicle that the German people and the Aryan race are the heirs to the pagan German legacy of might makes right, of the everything goes to the victor. And in fact, he came with this idea and made, even in 1938, after the Olympics, they had a Nazi propagandist make a movie about this, Leni Riefenstahl. Now I've butchered three languages, German as well. The movie Olympia. It was a Nazi propaganda film released in 1938. And the World War II, as we know, started in 1939. Okay, now how did we get this idea of a fire that would not go out and the torches? Well, good thing Germans were good engineers, because Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, a German arms manufacturer, they were able to craft the steel-clad torches that featured a magnesium burning element designed by German chemists to stay lit regardless of weather conditions. Okay? You know, when it comes to German and fire, we Jews don't dig it so much. And then Germany's Zeiss Optics built the mirror that was used to light the flame. Okay? And basically they would use the sun rays to be able to focus them to be able to light the flame. And then it was carried from country to country many thousands of miles until it got to the stadium in Berlin in 1936. On the way, when it went through various countries, Austria, the Austrian Nazis saluted with Heil Hitler, sang the Nazi party anthem. They were super happy. They hurled epithets, meaning basically the insults at Jewish members of the Austrian Olympic team. Does anyone heard how much security the Israeli athletes need in this Olympics in modern day 2024 in Paris because of all of the vitriol and all of the name calling to the Israeli athletes? Is this ringing a bell slightly? Okay. And then it was welcomed at the Czech border by 50,000 Germans the morning of July 31st, 1936. And then finally, runner Fritz Schilgen. He entered Berlin's Olympic Stadium before 100,000 onlookers. He was an elite runner, not an Olympian, but he was chosen for his youthful Aryan appearance and graceful gait in which he lit the torch in the stadium. Less than 2 years later, the world was engulfed in a world war, and the Olympics would not be held again until 1948, after World War II. Okay, folks, you got a lot of very interesting facts about the Olympics and the Olympic torch, and now it is time to rock and roll with some Jewish approach to this fascinating subject. So let's go right back to the beginning of the Chumash, the beginning of the Torah. And it says that Bereshis Bara Elokim, in the beginning of God's creation, Es HaShemayim VeHaRetz, in the beginning of God's creating the heaven and the earth, VeHaRetz Haisa Sohu VaVohu, the world was, the Aretz was null and void, VeChoshech Al Penei Tehom, and there was darkness on the face of the deep, Ruach Elokim merachefes al penei hamayim. Okay, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the deep. Now, the rabbis say an unbelievable thing in the Midrash, that right from the beginning of the Chumash of the Torah, we have an unbelievable reference in these four descriptions of what the world was like. And they actually correspond to different periods of Jewish history. Four different exiles. Okay? And when it gets to the description of choshech, of darkness, who to whom does that correspond, that corresponds to Greece, which is unbelievably fascinating because the Greeks are all presumably about light and the torch and knowledge and wisdom and advancements and scientific inquiry and enlightenment. And yet the Torah, the rabbis, the Midrash, and the oral law say that in fact the Greeks are the epitome of darkness. And how in the world do we reconcile this? So the Greeks had a mindset, and their mindset was as follows. Whatever I can measure, see, touch, taste, feel, that exists. That is reality. If I cannot measure it, taste it, touch it, or quantify it in the physical realm, then therefore it does not exist. This impacted everything that they did. Their gods were physical gods. There was a Zeus that beat up his father to establish the Olympic game, and their entire theology was of gods that were very human-like. There was not one omnipotent, invisible power called God, because if you can't see it, it doesn't exist. And they used and celebrated physical power and physical might to say that that is right. And that is the way of the world. That to the victor goes the spoils. That the strongest and mightiest is the one who deserves the diadem, the crown of glory. And the Torah says just the opposite. That the main point of life is not the glorification of the body. The body is the temple, as it were, of the soul. It is the outer encasement of the essence of who we are, which is the soul, which cannot be seen or touched or quantified. But it's real. And I ask my students all the time, do you have a soul? Right? And they'll say, sure, you're the rabbi, you want to say yes. We say yes. I said, no, you're wrong. We don't have a soul. We don't have a soul because we are a soul. The Jewish Torah and tradition tells us that the human being is essentially a neshama, a soul that you cannot taste, touch. You can sense it, but you cannot physically feel it. It's invisible. And that's the essence of who we are. And we are a soul that we have a body. The body is the casing that allows that neshama to go through this world. It's a physical world, and we need to engage in it. But we don't glorify the physical. The physical is not where we are. That's not our ultimate goal in our human existence. The great people who are deserving of praise and honor and glory are not the warriors, but they are the scholars, the prophets, the rabbis, the rebbetzins, the great spiritual leaders who may not be able to throw a javelin, but in a time of anger are able to hold their tongue. They may not be able to swim at an incredibly fast rate, but they are able to self-sacrifice and be giving to others to the point of self-sacrifice. They may not be able to run a marathon, but they are able to focus in on what is important in life, in prayer and in giving and in study and in helping others. That is what true greatness is. Those are who our heroes are. And so why do the rabbis call the Greek culture darkness? Is because it's very attractive and it draws us away from the essence of why we're here. They darken the eyes because they obfuscate, they block the ultimate purpose for what we're here. We're not here to flex our muscles. We are here to flex our souls. Now, of course, we believe in exercise. And hey, fun recreation for games, don't get me wrong. And sports, fine, great, we love them. No problem whatsoever. You'll see me on my son's baseball field all the time. But the question is, what is the purpose of our life? Who are the people that we give our honor to? Who do we look up to? Is it the great athletes or the great spiritual giants? And so it was no mistake that the Nazis took up this theme, because that was what they were all about, that might makes right, and we will dominate physically the world, and therefore the Olympics fit perfectly into their worldview as the successors of pagan culture and physical prowess. We can do better. We know that we are here for our neshama, for our soul, to help others to become the best spiritually. And that is the real spiritual Olympic torch that was lit at Mount Sinai 3,336 years ago, that generation after generation of Jew has fought for tooth and nail against pogrom and fire and water and crematoria and Cossacks and every type of torture and inquisition and crusade, that nothing will take us away from being Jewish. And that is the great spiritual Olympic torch that we go from generation to generation, declaring that we are the people that represent Hashem in this world. And so, as we enjoy the Olympics and have fun with them, which is certainly something that is possible to do, we should not be blinded by the fact that that is not the ultimate in human achievement. The ultimate in human achievement is coming close to God and to develop our spiritual greatness. And with that, we will bring much happiness in heaven and truly pass on the spiritual Olympic torch to the next generation. God bless. Have an amazing week. And we'll see you again right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.